people that call us are looking for energy efficient builders, and we find that they fall into two categories. They either really know what they want and what they should be expecting, and they've been ringing around builders trying to find one that actually gets excited by the fact that by the fact that they want to do something that's a bit different, or they've not known what they're looking for in an energy efficient builder, and they've spoken to a whole bunch of people that have given them the greenwash.
G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. My guest on the show this week is Jackson Digney from Adelaide, South Australia. Jackson started Enduro Builders a few years ago, and Enduro Builders is quickly becoming one of the leading builders of high performance and sustainable homes in Australia. I met up with Jackson while he was nearing the completion of another stunning home in the Adelaide Hills while I was visiting home in late 2019, and I've been keen to get him on the show since. So in this chat, we discussed how Jackson got into building in the first place and how Enduro Builders is helping to lead an important change in the Australian residential building market.
I always wanted to be a builder, and I suppose that came from my old man owned hardware stores when I was a kid. And so I spent a lot of time around hardware stores and builders and trades and things like that when I was younger. And that kind of gave way to sailing when I got a bit older. And so when I finished school, I actually applied for construction management and accounting at two different unis, and got offered a position for construction management at a uni that was about an hour's drive away from home, and accounting at a uni that was 10 minutes from home. And at that time, I was like, uni and what I was doing at uni was not really a high priority, because at that point, I was having a real serious go at sailing for a living.
Right. And not so an easy thing to make a living out of.
No, that's why. I mean, I got really lucky in that we met. We did a tour in Europe, Matt Tracing, and we met Russell Coutts during right. that tour.
Yeah.
And at a regatta, at that we weren't sailing in the regatta, we were actually running the boats. And so we ended up having dinner quite a few nights with him. And after hearing about what we'd done and how we'd raised money to go and do the touring around Europe and all that, he told, and all of us had put our uni degrees on hold to do it.
Yeah.
And he listened to the whole explanation of how we went about getting the funding and all the stuff that we did. And he just laughed at us and he said, you know, you guys are crazy. And then he listed off a few names of people that were, you know, really well known in the sailing, you know, as people that were doing it for a living. And we knew all of the people on the list. And he said, there's only two people on that list that actually make the sort of money out of it that you guys think you want to make. There's yeah. me and Peter Gilmore. And I was like, well, we grew up with Peter in Perth. I mean, he's older than us, but we grew up with him as someone that was coaching and kind of in our lives. And that, for me, that was the end of sailing for a living, because I'd been told. And that, at that point in time, that was back when he just won his third America's Cup. So, you know, he was the worldwide authority on how to make a crust out of sailing. So, yeah, that was
harsh reality.
That was the end of that.
Yeah.
So I went back and I didn't actually end up finishing my uni degree. I bought a business that was doing yacht sales and shade sales, and got it into doing structural steel and balustrading and a few things that were construction related,
yep.
but still didn't really, building had kind of fallen to one side at that point. And then I met who's now my wife, Kylie, in Perth, because she was studying chiro and chiropractic, and we sold the business in I sold the business in 2008 and moved over to Adelaide with her because she'd finished her degree, and I was already on the path of selling the business anyway. And so I sold it and was at a loose end, and we moved over here, so I decided to get serious about building. And so I had a lot of trade skills in carpentry because of boat building and in boiler making and a few other things that meant that I got a job with a builder who, as a working as a carpenter, for a builder who does everything. So, you know, he'd go and hire an excavator and start excavations, and he pretty well did everything except for plumbing and electrical.
Old
and
school.
While I was working, really old school. So while I worked for him, I retrained and did the various certificates and things that you had to do to become licensed. And then I still hadn't really got into energy efficiency at that point. Like, I was just interested in building.
Well, what was the state of the industry then? You know, what was the demand for houses? Was it just kind of stock standard type housing?
We didn't really come across, like, and the guy that I worked for was a good, like, old salt builder, but didn't really have much of an interest in anything beyond the basics, really. So it meant that I wasn't working for someone that was exposed to that part of the industry. And it wasn't really until I'd been and worked for a commercial builder and did a few other things, and then went and started Enduro Builders, which is, like, I've skipped forward about 5 years, but I got a lot of experience working for other builders, and business knowledge. I did my time, and my business knowledge was there from back when I was younger, buying and selling businesses and running the manufacturing business, and it was just getting the experience in construction. And so, when I started Enduro Builders, I met, funnily enough, through my my wife's sister, Brett Aylin, who at that time was working with another architect in TS4. And Brett's now gone out on his own. But Brett really opened my eyes to energy-efficient building and sustainability. And then that kind of, you know, it started off initially as, like, oh, this is a good, it's a good niche to get into. But then it started to gel with some things that I'd kind of grown up with. My old man's always been pretty big on being out of his self-reliance, and the fact that we're doing a good job of ruining the planet day by day, and you know, the importance of investing in, you know, if you're going to make a big investment, you want it to be, you want to make sure that it's an investment that will last and give you a long return. And so those kind of types of thought patterns that I'd grown up with really gelled with what Brett was talking about, with, you know, you building high performance homes that don't use much energy and that are insulated well and all of those sorts of things. It started to become more to me than just being in a niche. It was about, well, this is actually, as a builder, you know, in the building industry, we're one of, we're probably one of the most wasteful industries. We generate a lot of waste. We're directly and indirectly responsible for a lot of greenhouse gas emission. And because we freight a lot of stuff around, you know, we run machines all day, every day, all of those sorts of things that are not directly related to building a house, but they occur because a house is being built. it all kind of gelled together, and suddenly I was found myself like, I want to go to the degree of energy efficiency, which is when I got into Passive House. So, and then I was completely down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah. No, so Brett was sort of dabbling in that as a designer, was he? Was he an architect?
Yeah, as an architect.
And yeah, were you doing some of his projects, or were you just kind of in the same circles?
Well, no. So what happened was that when I started Hero Builders, I had a few projects that were on, they were from people that I knew, and they were like renos and a new home. And then I got introduced to Brett through, like I said, my wife's sister. And and then Brett had a few projects, which I did, and they were high performance homes.
Yeah. And he would have been looking for a builder who was capable of doing that.
Yeah, and at least willing.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, that was one of the big things is that, and we find that every day, you know, the people that call us are looking for energy efficient builders.
Yep.
And we find that they fall into two categories. They either really know what they want and what they should be expecting.
Yep.
And they've been ringing around builders trying to find one that actually gets excited by the fact that, rather, you know, by the fact that they want to do something that's a bit different.
Yep.
Or they've not known what they're looking for in an energy efficient builder, and they've spoken to a whole bunch of people that have given them the greenwash, which
right.
And look, they're always the most, for me, the most enjoyable conversations, because they're educational conversations rather than about selling. It's about explaining to them, well, look, what you've been told is not quite accurate because, and then just running out the reasons and what the alternatives are.
So what are the typical misconceptions that someone has been greenwashed? What do they typically believe?
So one of the big ones that is happening a bit in Adelaide at the moment is that there's a few people getting around that are sort of downplaying the importance of airtightness.
Yeah.
To the point of saying that it's not important at all.
Yeah.
So it's really good with the Passive House background to be able to explain to them, well, you know, this is how airtightness works and this is why it works. And the flip side to airtightness is you have to be aware of this and this. Like, it's not all beer and Skittles going airtight.
Yeah.
So and the other
just on that point, I imagine, you know, because I grew up in Adelaide, I imagine, and I know you're still pretty warm there right now. You're up in the 30s still.
Was yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. Today it's a bit cooler, but not much. Still warm.
But still, yeah. I mean, warm and relatively pleasant for maybe a little bit too warm, but it can be quite pleasant for a good chunk of the year. So is one of the concerns that people just don't see the point of being separated from those outside conditions?
Yeah, so there is a lot of that comes through when we talk to people. They're like, well, what's the point of building a high performance house or building to, you know, kind of a what I call like a passive house spec, where you're going for the airtightness and you're ticking all of the pillars of a passive house but not necessarily going through the certification process. And that's when we start on the health discussion, and we talk about, you know, the benefits of being in control of the air in your house and having comfort level, so that when you don't have those days, because one thing is, yeah, big parts of Adelaide are pretty mild throughout the year, but we're also seeing bigger extremes. So when it gets cold, it gets really cold. And when it gets hot, it's really hot. And those extremes are the time where a regular stock standard house just lets you down.
Yeah.
Whereas one that's been designed and specified around the passive house pillars is going to either keep you warm or keep you cold in, or keep you cool in those extremes. And yeah, people are not always, well, the other thing that happens is people ring up and they've been sort of sold into a particular building material. And often it's, you know, a fandangle expensive building material that doesn't actually deliver what it's being sold as, if it's used in the way they've been told to use it. So, you know, there are a lot of really good products that don't add a huge amount of cost to the build and give you a huge benefit in performance.
So you're talking individual products or building systems or like cladding systems, that sort of thing?
A little bit of both. Yeah, right. A little bit of both. So, and it's one of the things that I got onto once I kind of got over the that feeling of, oh, this is, you know, it's a good niche area to be in, and started to go, well, hang on, like everyone should be getting a high performance house. Yeah. So we need to make sure that we bridge the gap between a lower quality minimum standard house and a house that really performs. We need to bridge the financial gap somehow. Yeah. And we'll never get to the price of a volume built house because it's just not possible. However, what we've done is we've worked really hard on the systems of the way we build and the materials we use, and we do a lot of prefabrication now, which has really brought the cost of our builds down. And what we've seen is that we look at some homes that we built recently and compare them to homes we built 3 or 4 years ago, and they are similar prices. And so what that means is building costs and building material costs have gone up, but our houses have stayed the same price, which means that they're actually
Your absolute costs have stayed the same despite inflation and everything else going up around it. So the relative cost is arguably cheaper.
Less, yeah.
So have you're doing your own prefabrication or are you contracting that out to someone?
Yeah, so we're working with a hardware store that went into making their own trusses and then they went into making their own wall frames. And it was about at the point they just started making wall frames that they met me.
Right.
And they met me because they reached out to me, obviously wanting to sell me timber and hardware. And it was around the same time that I was starting to really look around for modular building methods to try to lower our labor costs and lower the site wastage and just, looking at ways to tweak up our costs. Mm-hmm. And we, when they said, oh, we're doing trusses and we do pre-built wall frames, like, oh, pre-built wall frames, oh, I'll come down and see you. And so that was a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
And we've slowly been doing more and more fabrication in the workshop. And so what's coming to site now, that they're coming with the frames built with the wrap on, and then we're standing them up, and in the next couple of jobs or the most recent job, we put all the cladding battens on in the factory as well, and the next job we're going to try and get the windows in before they leave the factory.
So they're coming pre-insulated, or have you just got the wrap on one side?
Just the wrap on one side.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, and that saves a ton of time because the wall frames are, you know, they're lying flat on a bench. So you can just roll the wrap straight out, fix it in place. Yeah. It's just brilliant.
So they're doing those bespoke for you. I don't imagine, is anyone else ordering those?
No, there's they've got a couple of other builders, but at the moment, we've kind of drowned them out with work because they're pretty much just building stuff for us.
Nice.
And all of our homes are, like, every home is custom designed.
Yep.
And we have a lot of, like, we take on all the weird and wonderful. which means they were doing a house with a curved roof in we're doing a house with a curved roof at the moment. We're also at the same time building a U-shaped house, and we've got a two-story house on the side of a cliff coming up, and a house that has like a big curved section to it in the lower level, and it's kind of got all these raking walls, and it's pretty funky. And we're building them just at an incredibly economical price because we're prefabricating everything and we're sorting out all the structural problems before we're even turning dirt. So it just makes a huge difference. And it also means that because we have less waste and we have the guys on site are less tired because we crane lift all the walls in, which means that when it comes to making sure that air tightness details are done properly, the carpenters aren't knackered because they've been lugging timber around everywhere all day. That they're actually, they get to the end of the day and they're still pretty sprightly because we've used a crane to do all the heavy lifting.
And they've got more energy to focus on those details.
Yeah, that's right.
I've heard a few builders say that they've tried prefabrication of panelized wall sections, and they used to stick framing on site, and they try it once or twice, and they don't feel like they're saving much time or cost because they're still having to figure out how to stand the frames up, how to connect them to the foundations, and then how to connect all the individual panels together. And by the time they've done all that, they think, it'd be easier just to do stick framing. But obviously found a system. What's been the key to making that economical for you?
So the key thing is adopting technology. Uh-huh. So the prefabrication process starts with a 3D model of the house that shows every single piece of timber, and it allows us to go through where we do have discrepancies with the plans and where things are going to end up. We can go through and resolve all those problems in a 3D model.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the time that we put into that is measured in hours. And I was not doing prefabrication recently enough that I still remember when, we'd lose days on site because of trying to work out a detail.
Right.
Whereas we put in hours on the computer and those hours are one or two people working something out as opposed to, three or four carpenters on site standing around going, well, we can't do anything till we resolve this.
Right,
so
you
burn your money a lot faster on site than you do sitting in front of a computer. And it's like with all things, like prefabrication is a system in itself, and you can't just rock up with prefabricated frames and bang them up. You have to have thought about every step of it before you start building.
Mm.
And so it means you've got to kind of change your entire approach. But for us, it's paid off in spades. Like, as a general rule, we've wiped about 15 grand off the labor cost of every home.
Yeah.
And it took us a few carpenters to find one that could see the benefit of that for them.
Right. Because they might think you're taking away their value, right? As this is what I do. This is, I'm a carpenter.
Yeah.
I make frames on site.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is that the carpenters, so we, rather than just using first fix carpenters who are just good at banging frames together, we use second fix carpenters to put all the frames up and put everything together, which took a little bit of backwards education for them, but it means that you've got a more detail focused carpenter who can still work fast, and they, sure, the cost of carpentry labor is lower, which means that that money is staying in the client's pocket instead of ending up in the carpenter's pocket. But it means that we do more jobs in a year. So the carpenter is still almost, he's a contractor, but he's almost fully employed with us all year.
Yeah.
So him agreeing to really come on the journey with us in prefab has actually increased the amount of work he's got with us.
Yeah.
So he's in front.
Everyone's
having a win.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's an important part of it is you're bringing all those people along with you for the ride and educating them along the way. It sounds like you've education's been a key part of that right through to the framing manufacturer.
Yeah.
Who you've kind of spent time with them talking through what you wanted to do and adapting their systems as well.
Yeah, and it's I think like I get told it so many times that I'm starting to believe it. People say you like this comes from architects and other trades, and they're like, there's no other builder that we've dealt with that works the way you work.
Yeah.
In that you share all of your knowledge and you you're also happy to take on and talk about other ideas. Like every so often I'll be explaining to someone, you know, why I want to avoid using a piece of steel because of the thermal bridge it creates and how we're going to work around that and talking all of that through. And someone will come up with a completely left of field idea.
Right.
And I'm still a builder at heart. So my initial reaction is, no, we're doing it my way. But I'll at least stop and go, oh, well, hang on. Actually, if we follow through that idea, it might actually work. So our builds they're really collaborative, and the collaboration happens before we start, which is where all the value for money comes from. Because once we start building, everything's worked out and the house is just up they go.
Well, that seems like a key concept as well. It's spending hours at the design, which I can imagine might get a little bit frustrating at times. You just want to get stuck into it, but you're saving days down the track by spending hours up front.
Yeah. So, and it is one of the things that does make us stand out when people are talking to other builders is that we charge a flat rate for that pre-construction costing and back and forth and working things out. Mm-hmm. So architects and engineers might be charging by the hour or by like a sliding scale fee. We charge a flat rate because at the end of the day, you know, we'll build the house, but we do put a value on all of that input that we give because one of my big things is that I want every client that we build with to come out the other end of the building process, not only saying that it is fun and enjoyable to build, but also being really knowledgeable on building and able to sit there at a dinner party, and if one of their friends goes, oh, you can't do that, you know, that's not the way it's done.
Yeah,
and say, well, actually it is, and you know, this is why it's done that way, and be able to, you know, re-explain what they've learned.
Yeah. So back to the convincing people that air tightness is a good idea. Do you think Australians are getting their head around that?
Looking at who we've built for in the last few years, I've found that the people are at two ends of their lifespan are getting their head around it. So people that are just about to retire, they're right across it.
Yeah.
And people that are kind of in my age bracket, so like mid-30s into early 40s, are really starting to see that if they're going to spend money building a house, they want to make sure that they get the thermal envelope right and that air tightness is covered. And then fast if their kitchen's a downgrade kitchen or they just put a sealer over their floor rather than putting tiles down or putting timber flooring or whatever it is, they're happy to scrimp on everything else except for that thermal envelope. And, we get that. We find that we seem to build for – we don't really build for many people in that middle age bracket, like mid-40s to under 60.
Yeah.
And the ones that we do talk to have – that kind of like, no, I can get, you know, I can get a house built for 100 grand. I'm like, you go right ahead.
Yes. Yeah.
That's your thing. So, I think airtightness is, it's certainly more and more people are ringing up for initial phone calls with us and having at least some understanding of airtightness. Or at least they're asking a question about it. I mean, I would love for, and we're considering doing it with our marketing, is having a, like we have all of our homes have been blower door tested since I started the business.
Yep.
So we've got a scorecard, if you like, of what we've achieved.
Yeah.
And I've, at one point we were putting them up on Facebook, but if you were looking, you wouldn't be able to find it easily. So we're actually considering like having the Enduro scorecard type arrangement and sort of listing off what airtightness we achieved exactly.
What's your best one so far?
0.59.
Oh, just scraping.
It got rounded up to 0.6, but yeah, it was that was well, that was the house that you came to.
Oh, was that going to be certified?
No,
right.
No,
but have you done any certified ones?
No, we're still trying to talk everyone that comes in and wants to do a passive house spec.
Yeah,
I'm like, sure, you don't want it certified. I think if I get one that's, you know, close, I'd probably wear half the cost or something of getting it certified.
Yeah, it'd be worth it.
You know, could get that feather in.
Yeah.
So I have the house that you came to, I'm slowly getting it through, like I've modeled it up in Design PH to put it through the PHPP so that I can see what the result is.
Because
we've got all the data, but
one day. Hey, we're about to run out of time, but before, I imagine another big part of costs is windows and joinery. What do you do for windows?
PVC, every job.
And are they imported locally?
No, we work with a company in Adelaide who import the extrusions and they manufacture them here.
Yep.
And again, it's that collaboration and having a team. Like we've been working with them for 6 years now, and we provide them with our built-in details that we've worked out, and it's helping them to get less phone calls from agitated builders about we're meant to get these things in. And in return, we're at the forefront of everything that they do. So
any pushback about using your PVC in hot sunny climate?
No, occasionally we'll get people that whinge about the size of the frames.
Because they're big and chunky.
And which the supplier that we use are bringing out a smaller frame.
Uh-huh.
They're actually changing suppliers. So that should alleviate part of that problem.
Right.
And I think that, most people, once they explain the thermal bridging benefits of using UPVC and then, of course, double glazing, and then I talk about longevity of the product and serviceability and all those sorts of things. Yeah. People are usually any discussion about anything else is kind of passes by.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
They get it. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, you're doing great stuff there, Jackson. You're kind of leading the charge in that high performance space. In South Australia, but probably across Australia as well. You know, there's not a lot of people that it's getting more, but you're up there amongst the leaders in that space, and you've got some great stuff. So, where's the best place for people to go and have a look at what you're up to and get in touch if they want to find out more?
Yeah. So our Instagram and our Facebook is very active.
Yeah.
Both Enduro Builders
and
then our website, which is endurobuilders.com.au.
And that was Jackson Digney of Enduro Builders in Adelaide, South Australia. Definitely check out his website, endurobuilders.com.au, and I'll link that up on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at homestylegreen.com/210, episode 210. And yeah, definitely worth checking out some of Jackson's images and some of the projects he's got on there. They are stunning, and they are really high performance as well, which is great to see that combination of really nice aesthetics and knowing that they also perform really well on top of that. I'd love to get your thoughts on that show and on that episode and the show in general. You can email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. Love to get your feedback, and also would love to get your support for the show. If you do find it interesting and valuable, then you can support the show with a Patreon page that I have set up. There's a big button on the front of the website, and that goes a long way to supporting this show and helping to keep it online, keep it published, just covering some of the expenses of running the website and the blog and the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.